What's up, boys and girls, and thank you for listening to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. Before we get started with today's awesome podcast, just a few reminders for all of you. Don't worry, I'm not going to go on and on for about 10 minutes like most podcasts, just a few things to remind you about. As a former Circa winner, I get a lot of questions about signing up for the many awesome contests at Circa Sportsbook, especially around proxy services. If you want to sign up for the Circa Millions or Circa Survivor, $10 million plus in prizes this year at Circa, no one does it better. And if you don't live in Vegas, you'll need a proxy. A proxy puts the picks in for you every single week, and there's only one guy who I would recommend for that service, and that is at Football Contest on X on Twitter. Connect with Maddie and his team for the best proxy service in town. There's a reason why they're always surrounding Circa winners. They never get a selection wrong, and they've been doing this for a long time. There's nobody who I'd recommend more than Maddie and his team at Football Contest. Make sure you get in touch with them before you sign up. Also, just want to remind you, if you can't go to Vegas, if you can't sign up for Circa this season, there are so many great contests available in the NFL at The Season. That's theszn.com. And if you sign up using my promo code, you can get an extra $10 off your first pool bundle. So you can get the classic NFL bundle, which is four pools and over $175,000 in prizes for just $20. 50% off the full price. Just go to www, which is apparently important, www.theszn.com/FarleyBets to get that promo code, an extra $10 off your first pool bundle, so you can put in your contest entries as a chance to win hundreds of thousands of dollars. Lastly, I would like to formally introduce my audience to a new podcast offering from your boy Farley Betts called the NFL Roundtable. This is going to be a weekly podcast all NFL season, and it's going to be an NFL betting podcast that's different than the rest. Why? Because usually it's one or two guys talking and yapping the whole time. We're bringing you a whole roundtable of pro bettors and NFL sharps, Patrick Gates and Kiev O'Neill from the Oddsbreakers, Ryan Reynolds, who contributes over there at ETR and Roto Underworld. Of course, I partnered with him at the 33rd team as heads of betting. Scott Kellen, you may remember him from the BetUS NFL show with me, and many, many more special guests throughout the season, and a few guys who you might not have met before, but you need to meet because these are a bunch of sharp dudes talking NFL betting. It's going to be fun, and it's going to be awesome just to hear all the different opinions and insights from these sharp NFL minds. So stay tuned every week, every Tuesday afternoon, the NFL Roundtable podcast coming your way. Again, thanks so much for listening to Laying the Points with Farley Betts, and let's get to today's guest. Okay, boys and girls, we have a very special, when I say very special, I mean a very special podcast today because, you know, a few years ago, maybe your boy Farley Betts, he won fifth place, you know, whatever, right? Fifth place. It was a tough year. It was a tough year in Circa, but we have two first place winners of the Circa contest on Laying the Points with Farley Betts today. So I am very excited to welcome Tony Derbify, better known as Derbify, I guess, to the betting community, and last year's winner, Maddie Saint on Twitter. What's going on, boys? And welcome to Laying the Points.
What's going on, Chris?
It's going to be a fun half hour, 40 minutes, just chatting football, chatting season, reliving some of the glory days, and looking forward to what we have in about a week and a half.
Did you guys enjoy the
ambiance? I think the last time I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead, man.
No, I was saying, do you guys enjoy the ambiance, the environment, the optics, maybe, of Stadium Pool? Did you go there at any point? Was that a good time?
Tony, I'll take this.
I did. I don't know. I think
Tony had a lot of fun
Friday and Saturday there. And if you've been there, you know there's not many places like it. You know, from the 70-foot screens to the cocktail waitresses to the drinks, you get it all. So it's a fun little place to be at. And if you haven't experienced it, please do. I think that all three of us here would agree that we would take a ticket back any day of the week.
Yeah, you can't beat the view, the pool, the scenery, everything that goes with it, the cocktails, and whether you're there for like an hour or a couple hours, you got to make the appointment to just set some time aside to go up there. It's so incredible, and yeah, it's tough to beat Circa these days, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I was there Wednesday and Thursday, which was cool. I mean, the pool was cool. On Friday, I'm hungover. I'm sleepwalking around the casino. And then, of course, I leave Friday. The next day, I saw what the pool was like with, you know, the first college football of the year. And it's like, just one more day, Chris. Probably just should have stayed there just one more day. But I was pretty tanked after just being there two nights. That's probably plenty for me at my ripe age. But boys, I mean, I was saying it before the podcast too. We didn't cross paths as much as I would have liked. Everybody was busy as hell. Of course, the two of you are former champs. So everybody wants to see you. Everybody wants to see the jacket as you walk around. Pretty cool shit. And I don't think I'm wrong about this, but you guys have the best records ever in Circa, I believe. I believe Tony's record was, you know, not that anyone's counting, but 2021, Tony's record is at the top, and Matt, you're right underneath.
I'm a half point behind Tony.
A half point. Half, yeah. So point. Not only are you two former Circa winners, but the best records ever in Circa. You guys should both be very proud of that. Matt, I just want to start with you with this question, since you're the most recent one. When did you like find out about this contest, and what was the sweat like? Like, what was it like as you were nearing the end of the season and you're like, holy shit, I might win this thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I found out about the contest 4 or 5 years ago, but I was always just like, I'm not going to make the trip out to Vegas. That was kind of a hassle. And then I did some offshore contests in the years between that, and I was doing really well. And even with like a couple weeks where I even forgot to submit picks, and I was still finishing top 100 in those contests. And so last year I told my wife, like, I need to get out there and invest in myself and like take advantage of the situation and see if I can really put my, see if this is real or not. So flew out there last July, registered, gave my $2,000 to Circa, $1,000 for Millions, $1,000 for Survivor. Thought it was a donation at the time. But then started getting hot really, it was like September, October. I think I was in first place mid-October already. And so that was in the first kind of like, oh boy, this could be something real. And then in November, I kind of went through like a little cold streak. Like, all right. And like, I think I ended up in mid 30s right before Thanksgiving, thinking the contest was kind of slipping through my fingers, you know, just those highs and lows throughout 18 weeks of NFL contests and betting and, you know, the highs and lows of, you know, the coin flips at times. But then from Thanksgiving through Christmas, I think I went 22-3 or something like that. It was bananas. Like everything at the end of the games was going the right way. All the bounces, all the coaching decisions, those things were going my way. I'd had an incredible run. So in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, that was when like the true sweat happened. I could barely sleep in December. My wife took care of Christmas for our kids. I was like a non-existent dad. I feel terrible about it, but like my wife recognized what was at stake here, thankfully. And so she wasn't always the most happy to do it, but at the end of the day, she did a lot of sacrifice so I could, you know, spend the nights and the early mornings in the office, you know, going through the numbers, going through, you know, my analysis of each game and things like that. And then finally week 18 came and I knew that, you know, just had to have one more solid week to kind of cement first place. And luckily it came through.
That's crazy, man. I mean, you know, I can speak for Tony too. We know that when you're doing these contests, when you're trying to really be a success at anything, but especially these contests with all the stress, you need that better half for sure to kind of hold you up emotionally, mentally, you know, just remind you that even if you shit the bed, everything's going to be okay. You know, we're very proud of you for what you've done so far. So I can relate to you about that, Matt. And switching over to Tony, you know, the year that I did Circa, I think it was 68, 21-1, something like that. Pretty fucking epic record. Tony. We're talking about 69%, but your ass had to be in Circa that year, hitting at what, 71%, something like that. Still the best record in Circa. What was the experience like for you, Tony, as you neared the end of the season?
Well, nearing the end of the season, I had a much different path than Matt there did. You know, I actually went into 18 like very, very calm, and I had actually no stress when it came to the week 18, and this is why I had a card in second and fourth place, and I know you know that, Farley, since you were watching us the whole way. And if you saw me, I played my top five and then the number two card, and I faded myself in the number four card. And when you did the math, I was going to get a top five finish and a 300K payout, no matter how that week ended. So, you know, when you put yourself in that position, it kind of alleviates a little of that stress and sweat that you have on that 18. I was super fortunate that the guy ahead of me skipped a beat, and I was able to jump over him and get there. But, you know, like Matt said, you know, everything went my way that year, you know, all the coin flips, when it came to the last few weeks, you know, I expressed to Matt over the dinner table, you know, I went 1-4 in week 12 and really thought that was the end of it. You know, when you get, run into a score like that, and you know, you think that the world's over, you know, and then again, we talked about it. You have your mates behind you telling you everything's going to be okay. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep on your path. And, you know, you flipped it around and I ended up, you know, running the ladder. So, for those out there that, you know, do have those bad weeks or one bad week or whatever it is, just remember, keep going, keep what you're doing, and you know, you'll climb over it like I did and hopefully get up there. I always tell people, when I told Maddie this, you know, we use our skill to put ourselves in the position up there, and we let the luck take over, because you know, we need the luck. There's no doubt about it. Nobody's going to hit at 70% with some luck without luck, and when I think all three of us can agree with that. So
absolutely, well said.
Yeah. That's I mean, I know in week 18 for me, when I was in two, two things happened, one positive, one negative, that were kind of freakish. But if the positive thing doesn't happen, which was that week, it was Buffalo against the Jets, I think. You know, Jets at that time suck. Buffalo scored a touchdown in the last like minute, I think, for no reason. Like, they were going to go on to the playoffs. They're fine. But they covered because of that. And that's incredibly lucky. But it was probably the difference between like 50 grand for me. And your guys' cases, right? Just those little tiny little things probably made all the difference for you. But that's true, right? It's so well said, Tony, because these guys are extremely good at what they do. But for everybody, it requires, you know, a little bit of fortunate circumstances to get to that point, of course. We already talked about Circa and why Circa is so great a little bit. We talked about how hungover we've been. But I think everybody kind of knows how great Circa is at this point. Tony, I'm going to give the mic right back to you because you were kind of already talking about it. What's your advice for contestants heading into the Circa contest or Circa Survivor as they start the season, throughout the season? You already said a few things, but like, what do you have anything else to say just about the mindset to have, you know, how to?
Yeah. There's a few things, you know, first and foremost, you're really not competing against 5,000 other people. You're competing against yourself. Okay. If you look at these contests annually, there's a percentage that you guys need to hit in order to make the money. So, you know, if you see that it's roughly 62, and then Circa nowadays it's running up to 65. But, if you just keep your path and not pay attention to the leaderboard, pay attention to who's above and behind you, and stick to that, put yourself in that position, like I said, and let that luck go. But if you're following people up top and trying to figure out what they're doing and how to defeat that, you're just going to get lost. And I think, I think Matt took that into some consideration probably in the last few weeks when you were going in, that's an important thing, And then another thing is watch your biases. It's really easy out here this preseason to catch biases, looking at teams, looking at players, looking at coaching staffs, and just falling in love with them. And it's really easy to go find good information to fall in love with somebody every week. You can find something good about every team you like that'll confirm your bias, and we call it confirmation bias, right? So if we can throw that out the window and try to keep more of a neutral eye on everything, I think that it'll take you a bit further in these contests as well.
Yeah, but I love it, man. How about you, Matt? Anything to add to what Tony said there, just about the experience, the approach, the psychology, anything?
Yeah, I think that's well stated by Tony. I think for me, I was in the lead for so much of December. I did peek at who were the chasers the last 2 weeks just to kind of get an idea of where I thought they were going to play. But I was also just trying to protect the lead. And maybe I tried to do that a little bit too much and got too cute at times. It was I think probably added more stress than necessary. But, you know, I think one of the things I learned last year was to not be afraid to pivot from my biases or my priors. So going into last year, for instance, I was thinking the Rams were going to be one of the bottom five teams in the league. You know, by week two or week three, I had to change that mindset really fast or else I was going to be in trouble. And another thing I think is, you know, this is a pick 'em contest at its core, right? And I think you have to change your philosophy whether you're actually betting dollars at the window. So you're kind of, your downside's already baked in. Like, you can't lose any more than $1,000 you already put in. So don't be afraid to do like non-traditional, you know, picks at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, going against line movement. You know, the Fezzik would probably beat me up for saying that, you know, because he won't make a play that goes against his line. But at the end of the day, like, you have to pick five, and there's a lot. that's hard to do. You know, there's some weeks you like two or three on the card, and you have to come up with two others. Sometimes it's nice to be contrary and go against, you know, what the masses are going to do. So you have to pick and choose your spots, knowing when it's right to play the line movement, when it's not. So just go through your own handicap and what you think it should be and not necessarily follow the masses is one of my recommendations.
Yeah, I love that. And we can have a whole podcast just talking about that probably, because I do think that in our industry, you know, contrarianism is kind of becoming like a sexy thing, right? So just like, it's almost like people are overthinking that concept a little bit, right? Like, all the steam, all the attention is going towards one team, so I have to be contrarian, right? And it's, I mean, it's really both, right? Like, just like kind of knowing when to pull that trigger because you're okay with it, because that's where your power ratings say, because you made the adjustments, not because of what everyone else is doing, you know, and all the noise, even if it's Steve Fezzik saying it, that doesn't mean you have to take the pick, right? So I love a lot of things that you guys said. Just for interest of time, let's move on to some NFL talk here, because boys, we are less than 2 weeks. I mean, we're like a week and a half away from the first game, you know, less than that actually. And I mean, I know that I'm excited, right? You got all the opportunities in the world right in front of us. So I'm going to start with you, Tony Durbify. You can follow him at Durbify on Twitter, always giving great insight about contests and NFL throughout the season.
Thank you,
Tony. You've said a lot about your Seattle Seahawks already on Twitter. And I got to say, at first I was like, man, I don't even know. Week one against the Broncos, I think the Broncos could be feisty, but I'm starting to come around a little bit on your Seattle Seahawks. So tell us a little bit why you have a higher perception of the Seahawks heading into the season.
Okay, Matt's probably he heard this over dinner. So, you know, yeah, you know, so let's rewind a little bit and just go back to last year. You know, we got a 9-8 team. You know, they came back from a few fourth quarters and had a little luck run on their side. They overachieved, let's be honest. You know, I don't think anybody expected Seattle to win 9 games last year. Okay, so, you know, you look at them and you say, hey, what do we need to do to get better for the following season? Obviously, you look, defense was a problem. Offensive line was a problem. And for me, and I think a lot of people, they noticed coaching became a problem. You know, no knock on Pete Carroll, you know, Hall of Fame guy, the best gum chewer in the world. So, you know, we know that the guy is knows his stuff. Yes, you got it. And, you know, he was a player's coach, and the coach and the players loved him, you know, and they played very hard for him. But I really do think that it was time for a culture change, and I think Seattle knew it. And, you know, they went out and found a man by the name of Mike McDonald from the Baltimore Ravens, defensive coordinator. We saw what he did to most teams last year with his scheming. He made teams look very stupid and very difficult most times. So, when I saw them hire him, it was a relief to me, because there was two things I wanted. It was a new coach and a defense. And I think he's going to come in and repair both of those. His scheming is great. He's got a personnel over there. Their DB combo might be the most electric in the league with Rick Woolen and Witherspoon over there. They replaced their inside linebackers who were slow. They replaced them with some quicker guys. So, you know, I think the defense will be a little better than most expect. And, you know, we did lose Nwosu just recently. I think you maybe saw that in the preseason. Got his knee rolled up on. Looks like he's out 4 weeks or so. So, you know, the good thing about that is if you look at their schedule, six of their first nine games are at home. They're going to have that 12th man. So, you know, hopefully they can work through some of this scheming, this early scheming, both offensively and defensively, with some of these early teams and you know, get a little head start going into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I really like it.
You look at offensively, this team, right? You know, this is electric all over the place. Receiving core, you know, we got three receivers, right? We got Lockett out there. We got Smith Nigbu.
This happens to me all the time. And I'm a podcaster every week. And entering the season, I have like 1,000 names circulating. So I'm always
Totally.
Yeah, my audience is gonna feel like I'm a jackass. I can't even think of this name. You know Seattle's wide receivers, DK Metcalf, etc. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. You got it, right? Okay. We got Walker in the backfield, Charbonnet to back him up. We got two electric running backs. You know, and another thing I didn't mention is they went out and grabbed Grubb from Washington. Okay. You know, where he's a college guy. So, you know, we don't quite know what we're getting from him, but we did see that he's an 11 personnel guy with Washington. He likes to spread the guys out with receiving core, give the backs a little bit of room. And this is exactly what I think Seattle needed. You know, they weren't utilizing this receiving core last year like they needed to. And I think that hopefully Grubb will come in, spread them out a little bit and get these guys the ball and make them more explosive when needed. You know, and all I hear all weekend is, what about Geno Smith? What about Geno Smith? Yes. Okay. He's probably hit his ceiling. Okay. But listen, dude, the dude was really good last year on first and second down. And, you know, when the line, you know, fell apart, he fell apart. So, you know, if we can give him a little bit of time, maybe get the ball out a little bit earlier, I think you're going to see a Seattle offense explode a little bit like they did last year. And with the defense and McDonald coming in and scheming, I think they'll put a little more lockdown on. And yeah, you know, they're going to compete in this division. I'm certain of it. So.
One thing I really like that you said, even to start it out, is and it's interesting. I was talking to a former Westgate contest winner at a blackjack table on Friday, right before I left. There was like a chance meeting, so we were just like talking shop. I forget the guy's name, unfortunately, but he talked a lot about organizations, right? And I think in the NFL, which kind of separates it from a lot of sports too, because you know the NBA half the time is just about the stars out there. You know, baseball's a lot about the pitchers, and I'm not going to even get started about baseball. But, you know, and in the NFL, the organization matters, right? The culture matters. Who's leading the team matters. And the first, you know, segments of what you said were talking about the organization itself and what the Seattle Seahawks kind of needed to breathe life into them. And I do agree with that, right? Like Mike McDonald, easy for me to say, coming from Baltimore, every guy on defense is trying to copy him already. You know, they were absolutely fierce. They've changed some things around. I heard they're hitting in practice, like they're allowed to tackle the offensive guys.
Which very physical. Guys, yep.
Right. So kind of, you know, instead of that, like happy-go-lucky, you know, a California easy breezy mentality of Pete Carroll. Now we have this guy who's bringing the heat, like he's bringing the physicality and the toughness for Seattle. I do like that. And I don't think Geno Smith is that bad of a quarterback either. Throws a great long ball. And to your point, going to spread out that offense a little bit. I do think just a lot of great points there, Tony. I want to pass it over to Matt and hear what he has to say, because if this was being talked about at the steak dinner table, I just want a little tidbit of what Matt's saying thought about it.
No, actually, when we were having dinner, it was a group next to us that had a disagreement on Seattle. I was actually in Tony's camp that Seattle's one of my favorite teams to rebound a little bit this year. Actually, on the other side of the toy, I actually thought Seattle was going to have a better year last year. I was kind of high on them going into the year. And to me, they underperformed. And I'm really excited about Mike McDonald and that system and just that culture shift. Bringing in the college coordinator, I think, is going to provide a lot of juice. You know, those coordinators usually kind of surprise teams early on with points and things like that. So with that wide receiver trio and Kenneth Walker in the backfield, I think they have some room for growth and improvement this year. But the team that I think could surprise people, not really on an over-under win total standpoint, but just on an ATS, two teams. I like the Vikings, and I'm not saying that because I'm from Minnesota, but I do think that they have a potential to backdoor cover a lot this year. I think with Flores at D, they have one of the worst secondaries in the NFL. They've replaced a lot of last year's guys with old treads. I mean, they just picked up Gilmore off the streets. I don't know what he's got left. I just think they're going to blitz a ton. And if they don't get home, they're going to get a lot of points scored against them. But on the flip side, the offense for the Vikings, I think, is going to be much improved versus the last half that we saw last year. I mean, if you look at the post-Cousins six or seven games last year, the Vikings offense did not like skip a beat very much at all. And that was with Nick Mullins and Josh Dobbs at the helm. And so now I know we have Hockenson is going to probably miss the first 5 to 7 games. But that wide receiver trio is just as good as anybody in the NFL. And they made an upgrade at running back with Aaron Jones that fits the KOC scheme very, very well compared to, you know, Ty Chandler and Alexander Mattison from last year. I mean, Mattison couldn't convert like a 3rd-and-1 or, you know, a goal line touchdown if his life depended on it. So I do think that they have the potential to give up a lot of points, but I think they have the potential to stick in games and get frisky towards the end with backdoors. And then the other team I want to mention is Carolina. I think, you know, last year was abysmal. I really think Bryce will step up this year. Like, I'm not saying a monumental leap up, but I think, you know, it couldn't get worse than what he had. I think you add in Deontay Johnson on the outside. I think that's going to help him just have a go-to receiver other than Adam Thielen in the slot. So I think that those two will help move the ball. They have a rookie running back. Obviously, Canales from Tampa Bay is coming in. And then I do like their defensive coordinator, Averro, quite a bit. I mean, he was first year from Denver last year. They were hurt really bad throughout most of the year with injuries on that defensive side of the ball. So I do think that Carolina, you know, I think the win total is 4.5. I kind of lean over there, but I also think that they could be a team that's undervalued on a week-to-week basis from a spread perspective too. So those are my two teams that I'm kind of looking from a week-to-week basis that I might be, you know, I guess, giving you guys a little, you know, tip into my hat here, but that's kind of the early leans I have. Obviously, let's see what the market reacts to it, but that's my early.
You know, I think that win total is up to 5.5 on Carolina now too. Wow. You know, so a lot of people jumped up on that. Money. So
I probably wouldn't like it at that number.
And
I would say that's a team to pay attention on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, to your point, you know, I'm not going to even look at your guys' faces when I say this because I, you know, I'm trying to steer clear of all the reactions heading into the contest season. But week one, I was going to go with the Saints in Survivor. And you know what? I'm already fading that because I'm like, I mean, first of all, you can't trust the Saints ever. You know, I mean, the definition of an average team last year. They lost to the good teams. They beat the bad teams. Big deal. And now you got Carolina, who I've heard just a lot of smart guys saying how they think that the Carolina Panthers could just, you know, not necessarily win a ton of games this year, but at least look a lot better and cover a lot of ATS and probably have a few upsets in the making. And I like what you said about Minnesota there too, Matt, because there's still stability there, right? I like Kevin O'Connell as a coach. And, you know, I sneakily kind of like Brian Flores coming to this season too, especially off of those comments of what Tua just said. You know, Brian Flores, like his career, his reputation is sort of on the line now. You know, I mean, I don't know if he gets another position as defensive coordinator if they don't show some market improvement this year. It's going to be tough in the secondary, like you said, but I see a motivated team on that end as well. So very interesting, guys. I love it. Of course, we could talk about these teams all day. I want to move on.
I'll tell you guys both. I have a pretty heavy ticket on week one, Carolina at 5.5. Just to let you guys know in my pocket.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Oh my God. So I mean, if anyone's taking the Saints, If I see anybody taking the Saints minus 5.5, I might have to call that out.
Stay away from that.
So let's just talk about some week one games. I'll leave it up to you guys. I put some high profile games on here that we could talk about. And, you know, of course, you're entering these contests. I don't want you to have to give away too much. But let's go back to Matt. Just, is there a spread that you're looking at for week one that you already really like, or that you think maybe is being overlooked by contestants and bettors out there?
Yeah, Chris, I think you're on the opposite side of this one, but right now I do like Atlanta minus 2.5. If it gets to minus 3, or I don't know what it is. Is it minus 3 still?
I think it's 3 at most books now.
Okay, yeah. Then I probably stay away from that one. But if it gets down to 2.5, I do like Atlanta there. I think Pittsburgh's got a really, really tough year ahead of them. We've seen what Russell Wilson looks like these days. Fields is, boom or bust, mostly bust. I think the Atlanta acquisitions are just enough to get them over, where they were from last year in their disappointment. So that's one that I'm kind of like looking at the moment. Minus 3 is a tough number though. Okay. But what I do like to call out though, and this isn't a contest play because I won't play Thursday night games, but I do like KC at minus 2.5. I think Baltimore could kind of struggle early on in the year with that transition away from Mike McDonald. They lost a lot of starters on their offensive line. They lost Patrick Queen. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry is a good acquisition, but he's getting a little old in the tires too. And then I think KC's had a really strong offseason. I mean, I think they were lucky to win the Super Bowl, lucky to get to the Super Bowl. If you look at their road to get there, they had a lot of tough matchups, and they weren't the same KC as old. But I think that their acquisitions in the offseason with Worley and stuff, I think they have a really, really strong year ahead of them. So I just think that between those two teams, I know there's that revenge angle from the playoffs, but I think – to me, the domino is Mike McDonald leaving. It really is. And I think that the schemes I'll put my money on KC minus 2.5 at home opening night.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Just for clarity purposes, I will not be betting the Falcons and the Steelers on week one, and you won't see it in Farley Best contest either. That's just a game that I'm staying away from. I've just seen so many aggressively confident takes on the Atlanta Falcons at minus 3. Even wasn't it minus 3.5 at one point? Maybe I'm making that up.
It was
at one point, right? Like a month or so ago. I'm glad that it moved down. At least there's a little bit of adjustment there. I just don't like that Kirk Cousins hasn't played at all. He's going up against the best player on the field in my mind is TJ Watt, and he could just take over a game, right? It's going to completely flip the game possibly. So it's just one of those games that I want to stay away from. I love your call on KC. I posted yesterday that the Ravens could beat them straight up, which I do think is true. They're coming off another Super Bowl win. But
I won't lie. There's a few red flags with that Atlanta game that I don't really love right now. Fact that Penix didn't play that last preseason game, that's like a red flag. I need to see Cousins. The one thing that does give me a little calm with Cousins is that offensive line for Atlanta is a top five unit. They're very strong on all sides of that line and interior. So even if Cousins hasn't taken a lot of snaps, I don't think he needs to be super mobile. Just hand it off to Bijan or do some screen passes, and then their talent on the outside. I mean, we haven't seen London's potential or Pitts' potential since they entered the league with what they've been doing with the play caller, Arthur Smith and stuff like that. So that gives me a little bit more confidence.
Yeah, very true. And Drake London still extremely productive, even in pretty poor circumstances with poor quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. So he's probably ready to break out. Let's go over to Tony. Tony, any week one spread that you just really have been eyeing for a long time, or you think that others?
Yeah, this one was kind of under the table for a little while, but it seems like some other people got on a little bit. But I'm going on a Monday night. We're looking at a Jet Niner game, right? So listen, dude, we if you've seen these Niners, they're internally have some issues right now. Trent Williams holdout, Ix, I don't know what he's doing. I just don't think they're going to be at full bore when they come out on Monday night. I realize they're at home. But I just think that, you know, on paper, I mean, we all know that this team is going to be a strong team. But Monday night, I do think that this Jet team, who, you know, oddly enough, we haven't heard a lot about all preseason. You know, there's none of this Aaron Rodgers drama. So, you know, I'm really excited to see how they come out defensively. I do think that they're going to catch this 49er team off guard a little bit. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a field goal game. And so anything over that 3.5 or at that 3.5 mark, I like. I think we're sitting at 4 right now. And I think it was at 5.5 when it started. So I think a lot of people are kind of seeing what I'm seeing a little bit with this internal thing. And then we know we have the Super Bowl hangover trend that's been forever, right? So, you know, we'll see if that plays into effect on Monday night as well. But yeah, you know, I as far as the Jets on a season standpoint, you know, I'm not as high probably as maybe some could be. I think I need to see with my eyes how they actually are going to come out and stand on the field with the rest of these guys. But that first night will be a great test. You'll be able to see really what these teams do to each other and hopefully use our eyes for the rest of the season off that game. So
I love what you said about the Trent Williams holdout. That is massive with that Jets D line.
Absolutely, man.
There's not an offensive tackle that moves the line more than Trent Williams.
Yeah.
Bulldog.
All three phases of that defense too, right? Like defensive line, linebacker, secondary. You could make a very strong case, and many have, that the Jets are number one in every single unit of their defense. And you talk about a team that's eager to just step on the field and show the world, right? They were winning games last year with, I mean, you know, Zach Wilson, basically no offense whatsoever. Like almost like the Jets in the first half, you know, like even more in full game possibly, because I think they're just going to come out with some real aggression there in San Francisco.
I like it. Yeah.
I like it, Tony. I like it a lot. Yeah, really good looks for both of you guys. Let's just move on to, how about a future? Are there any future bets, whether it's win totals, statistics, you know, maybe just like a special that's kind of under the rug and waiting to be picked out? Any specials from either one of you guys? I'll go back to you, Tony.
Yeah, I'm actually got a couple. You know, as far as season win totals, you know, I talked about it. You know, me and the Seattle, I hopped on them at 7.5 early. I think it was a -120 at the time I got it. And I think it's, I don't know where it is right now. If it's hit 8 or if it's just gone up in juice or not. But that was a big play for me. And then on that Seattle, we talked about Mike McDonald a lot this year. I went out and got him in 19-1 for Coach of the Year. He fits a great profile for that. If they can get to that 11 mark, possibly, I think he's a shoo-in for that, to be honest with you. I love that. I also hopped on another future, and that is DK Metcalf at over 950.5 yards. I think that we talked about this offense, and he's going to be an essential part of it. I think that they're going to scheme to get him the ball as much as possible, and 950 is an easy goal as long as he stays healthy, in my opinion. So, and then my last was on Maddie's point. We talked about Mike McDonald and leaving the Baltimore Ravens. I do think they're going to regress this year, and I hopped on them early. The season win total under 11, and I hopped on those both right away once I saw Mike McDonald go from one direction to the other. You know, he's going to be something to a formidable coach here in the future. 37 years old, youngest guy in the league. You know, you're going to see him for a while. So I'm excited to see what comes of that. So,
you know, personally, I hate it when I see that, like, there's an NFL coach who's 37. I mean, I'm 38. Like, what the hell? Like, what the hell am I doing, guys? You know, Sean McVay was in the same position a few years ago too, when he first became coach. I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
What's going on?
I totally agree with you. I think that he could be a future top five coach, and he's certainly heading in that direction. Let's go over to Matt. Matt, any futures to give to the audience?
Yeah. When I was at Circa, I played Cowboys to miss the playoffs at +180.
Love that one.
Yeah. Let's go. I just think they've had a really tough offseason. They've lost Quinn as the defensive coordinator. I don't think they've got the horses other than Parsons back there anymore. Bland is already going to miss some time, I think, the first 5 or 6 weeks. And, you know, it's tough to replicate those interception numbers also. And I think Philly just steamrolls that division this year. And then I also think that there's a little friskiness with the Commanders a little bit in that division. So I just think that Dallas is going to be in for a harder year. You saw they lost Pollard. They brought back Zeke. I heard they're bringing in Dalvin Cook today for a look. I mean, that position doesn't sound good. Their offensive line lost left tackle. But anyway, they lost a couple of pieces on their offensive line too. And I just think that they're in for a tough year. And you can also, Mike McCarthy as the head coach, he's always kind of a fun guy to bet against.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Indeed. Yep, indeed. Yeah. I like that, Matt. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Tyron Smith is who I think you meant.
Yes, Tyron Smith. Yeah. I was going to say Tyler Smith, but that's actually a good left guard.
They also got rid of the center too, which I don't know his name off the top of my head. Yeah, big time changes there in Dallas. How do you like how they went from basically worshiping Tony Pollard, to getting rid of him, bringing back Zeke? Like it just the whole operation just seems all over the place.
Pollard was like the talk of the town last year for offensive player of the year. He was like on the fantasy side of things, he was like a first or second round pick. I don't know if you guys do fantasy or not, but he was being talked like he was easily going to be way better than Zeke ever was. And yeah,
100%.
They want to replace him by week 10.
Yeah, like my buddy Ryan Reynolds said on the podcast last week too, the Cowboys are one CD Lamb injury away from being a dumpster fire on offense. I mean, truly.
100%.
Not
only that, CD Lamb's been out on the boat in the Bahamas for the last, 4 weeks hanging out. So,
we all know what he's going to be.
What kind of shape is he going to be in when it comes on? Right. So. Yeah,
It's not a good thing. Well, guys, listen, I'm going to blow you guys both up a little bit here because you deserve it. I mean, when you listen to these guys talk and just the way that they talk about approaching contests too, you could just tell there's almost a stoicism about these guys. They're professionals. They're calm. They're cool. They're collected. And they're confident about their takes. And if you guys are going to have any follows on Twitter, I have a lot of great guests on my show. But Matt is at Matty Saint. Tony is at Derbify. They're going to be giving out content on Twitter throughout this year. I don't know how much content you guys are giving out, but I know that you speak about your opinions here and there. Just great, great accounts to follow, great guys to know. So glad that I got you on this podcast. I wish that I would have ran across you a little bit more in Vegas, but many more Circa trips in the future for all of us. Really appreciate you guys joining today.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having us. This was fun.
If I could say anything, Maddie and I are in the Friday Invitational Friday night. There's a lot of great cappers in that. If you can hop in Friday nights on VSiN and listen, you're going to get a lot of great info too. And anytime Chris hops on with any guests, you're always going to get great content. So thanks, Chris, for having us. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah. Appreciate that, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right. Good luck, guys.
Yeah.